Now, the cool scientist is here, Sean Duke. Good to see you again, Sean. And literally good to see you again, Sean.
Yeah. 2 years later, Declan, we made it this far.
Yes, indeed. Broadcasting from our various locations and things like that.
Yeah.
But I happen to be here today and you happen to be here, so it's great to see you and all that.
Good to see you too.
And I see you've got a byline in the Irish Times as well. Oh, yeah. We're not dealing with muck here, you know. We've got the cool scientist with his own, article. And it's tackling chronic disease with gene and cell therapies. Ireland can lead the way.
Yes, so this is an article, a gene therapy, just to briefly explain. That's where you correct a gene defect that's an inherited disease. And some of these are easily corrected. You just go in and you can repair a small area of DNA and fix it, you know. Some are more complex. And then you've got this other thing called cell therapy. And that's where you take the cells from the patient or a donor. You do something to the cells in the lab and you put them back into the patient so that they fix the disease or that they correct the defect. So they're kind of two things that work together, and these are the real cutting edge of medicine. They're called regenerative medicine. So, you know, for example, as we get older, say with our knees and our hips and all of that stuff start to degenerate, that the hope is that, you know, for example, we may be able to regenerate bone tissue to repair all that damaged tissue, so you wouldn't have to get replacement hips or knees, which would be amazing.
Right, and tell us about gene therapy. You better explain it, because genes and chromosomes, and there is certain conditions which are dictated by chromosomes. So,
yeah.
One extra, one fewer, or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so, what's the difference between that and genes?
Well, I suppose an easy one that's very common to explain might be cystic fibrosis. Actually, here in Ireland, that's a genetic disease, and I think we're the highest incidence in the world. So, basically, there's one in 19 people are a carrier of this cystic fibrosis gene. So that means on the DNA, which is this spirally structure that people might have seen, there's it's full of millions of Lego blocks, if you like, and there are four colours of Lego blocks, A, C, T and G, you could call them, right? Adenine, guanine, cytosine, thymine. And they're arranged, all these four blocks are arranged in a long string that's unique to every person. But there are certain things that we share in common. So if on the DNA, there's a single mutation can cause cystic fibrosis, which is amazing. So that's called a point mutation. So you can actually you can repair that fairly easily. With cancer, the problem is that lots of areas of the DNA will affect cancer. So if you're trying to use gene therapy for cancer, you'd have to repair maybe hundreds of different areas, and then they all mix together. So some are easier than others, I guess, Declan, is the thing. But the first thing that the scientists have done is they've identified on the DNA, the spirally helixy thing, which is in all our cells and every living cell, they know roughly where to look for the diseases. So if you know this pattern causes the disease, this pattern is what we need to actually correct the disease, then they literally can cut and paste. They've got a new technology called CRISPR. It's a big acronym for something. But they can go in there, they can cut out the gene that's causing a problem, they can insert a gene to correct it. And the low-hanging fruit, as I say, are these point mutations, which they're just single errors, which is amazing on this big, long string. You just take out one Lego block, if you like, out of this big, long line, and it causes a problem. It causes a big problem. Now, in Ireland, we have this Regenerative Medicine Institute, which is in Galway, which is a real hub for this with medical technology. And that's what I was writing about in the Irish Times today, where they're going to combine these cell and gene therapies. And they have been working on osteoporosis in knees. So they've actually got to the stage where they've done a trial, a clinical trial, they call it, involving a number of patients down there that have osteoporosis in their knees. And they've injected cells into the knees, and they say they haven't released official results yet, but I've been told that the results look very promising. So wouldn't this be fantastic if they're going to go on to the next stage? Wouldn't it be fantastic, instead of having to insert bits of metal into us or titanium hips, or that you could actually remove the disease part that's in your knee, you could inject these stem cells, that magical cells that can become any cells, and before you inject them you say, listen, we want, once you get in there, we want you to become bone cells, and they fill out the area.
And where, it repairs.
And it repairs. And it's just amazing what is possible. So it's not just the bone. They're you know, the vision, if you like, is that you could have a kind of a self-repair kit for all parts of our body. So say the heart. Say the heart is damaged by a heart attack. Somebody could get maybe an insertion of cells where the cells of the heart would repair themselves. Even the brain, which is such a complex organism they're talking about, it's possible, they think. I mean, this is very futuristic. Even in Alzheimer's, where there's physical damage in the brain, that you could use this therapy to inject stem cells that would regrow new nerve cells in the brain, neurons, which might help people to recover from Alzheimer's. So it's the goal here, the big goal, is that we're going to help people, the scientists want to help people to live longer, but not just longer. Health span is the thing that they talk about, not lifespan. So, you know, you want to live to be 90 years of age, great, but you don't want to live for 30 years being unwell. You want to live as long as you can in a healthy state. So this will help us repair our body as we go along and age or get diseased.
Okay, well, it's Sean Jute, the cool scientist, and he has written in the Irish Times about this subject, so that's where you find it more extensive about the work that's been done in Ireland as regards this. Other stories of science in the news, reptiles. I don't know, I remember used to go to Ibiza years ago and see various little lizards on the wall and things like that. Harmless, you know what
harmless,
I mean? But
yeah.
People say, oh, Jesus, I wouldn't be sleeping in here now, the old lizard up on the wall. But see a lot of little reptiles like that running around the place. But the bad news is that one in five reptiles now in danger of extinction. Many people probably say, well, good enough for the bloody crocodiles anyway. But
exactly, yeah.
But what do you think?
Yeah, well, you remember the reptile house in Dublin Zoo when you're a kid, nobody wanted to go in because you were kind of afraid of the crocodile in there. But yeah, the thing about it is that there's been an awful lot of attention on mammals and problems with mammals because they're nice and furry creatures and they're like us, they're warm-blooded. But reptiles, they're a bit like dinosaurs. They're scary, and crocodiles,
yeah,
and
snakes, and all
snakes. We don't like these things. And so we've kind of, even scientists realize that we've kind of dropped the ball in terms of studying what's going on with them. So this study, which has been reported in the BBC and lots of other places today, is talking about the fact that one in six, I think it is, I'll have to get the exact figure, I think it's one in six, sorry, one in five, it's even worse, one in five reptiles in the world is in danger of extinction. It took them 15 years to do this study, massive study involving 10,000 species across the world, crocodiles, turtles, some examples of things that are in trouble, geckos, they're the kind of little lizards, you might know them. They're vanishing due to wildlife trade, so they're being killed for a trade in wildlife. Then you've got a crocodile called a mugger crocodile, and his habitat is being destroyed by humans. You've got a lot of these creatures. Now, you might say, as you said earlier, why do we need them? Well, actually, one thing we need these reptiles for is to control pests like rodents. You know, and they're all, we should remember that even though they look kind of scary, they're part of the natural cycle, and without them, their job of controlling pests, for example, wouldn't be done, so we'd be overrun. So we do need them, and we do need them because they're part of the ecosystem, and like a lot of other things, they're disappearing and we need to do something about it.
Okay. All right. Another warning sign up there. Now, self-driving cars. We've often spoken about self-driving cars. And the thing is to put the intelligence into self-driving cars. So if a car is going along the road and it's going to knock down a mother and child, do you automatically build in some intelligence that will avoid the mother and child crossing the road, but it will plow into a bus stop where there's a whole lot of elderly people? So which does it choose, life or death for an individual? So how do you program that into a car? So yeah. Self-driving cars in global sense, first of all, and the decisions that it made. What's the studies at the moment?
Well, this was prompted by an article in The Guardian this morning by John Nocton. He's actually an Irish guy at Cambridge University, an academic, and he writes about technology for them. But he's a bit critical of this, you know, Britain moves towards a self-driving revolution, which he says is not really the case. Because apparently in the UK at the moment, he says that they're changing the highway code, so to ensure that self-driving vehicles are introduced safely on the roads. So they have to clarify the rules, because there's going to be new rules, obviously. So the what you have at the moment is you are in self-driving mode. He has a Tesla, and he talks about that. And once it's driving on the motorway, it's pretty good at staying in lane. But his point is that you have to constantly tell the system, I haven't driven a Tesla, you have to adjust the wheel, I think, to say that you're in control. So you have to be alert, you can't switch off. So that's not really self-driving, he says. And then they have a rule, apparently, that you can view, you're permitted to view content that is not related to driving on a built-in display screen. So you could be going to work and this thing, you're watching whatever, Peaky Blinders in your car, and that's actually allowable. But you're not meant to use a mobile phone, because that's still dangerous, apparently, and you have to be ready to intervene. So he's saying that if you take it from an engineering point of view, he's part of this Society of Automotive Engineers, that they're only really at level two, what the engineers call level two at the moment. So level two is partial driving automation. He says, don't mind Elon Musk, that actually, you know, this is only partial. We're not there yet. And because you're sitting there, you have to take control any time.
It's not real.
And it's not real. And once you go off-road, he says, you've got a big problem, because you don't have the markings, so it doesn't know where the lanes are. So
so don't believe the hype is the message. Now, finally, controversial comments. Girls don't like physics, as they won't do hard maths, says UK teacher. I mean, so much during history, and you pointed this out before, that women involved in great studies through the ages, but it was their lecturer or somebody else on the project who was male would get all the credit.
Absolutely, yeah.
So somebody else is perpetuating that, or am I reading that right?
Yeah, well, I have to be careful here, because I'm an ex-teacher. So this is a woman called Catherine Burbal Singh, I think is her name. And she's a head teacher, quite controversial, member of the Conservative Party, the Social Mobility Commissioner, and she's a head teacher and involved with STEM, as they call it, is science subject teaching in the UK. And she was asked a question at this committee in the House of Commons, why aren't girls doing STEM subjects? And she said, well, actually, they are doing biology, they are doing chemistry, but they're not doing physics. And physics, as we'll remember, is the really kind of hardcore thing with machines and lots of mathematics and that kind of thing. So she was pressed on that, and then she said, well, actually, girls just don't fancy it, they don't want to do it. And then they were asked, she was asked again, well, why is that, you know? And she said, look, I just don't, her quote is, I just don't think they like it. There's a lot of hard maths in there, and I think they would rather not do it. So that really kind of got her into trouble. But she is an ex-teacher, and she did make the point, which I think this point is valid. She says that just 16% of our sixth form, that sixth year, physics students were girls. Now, when I was teaching, that's 20 years ago at this stage, before journalism, I was a teacher. And it was the same then. There was a very small number of girls. I was in a boys and girls school that were doing physics. And I would have thought, like, in the 20 years that it would have changed, but it hasn't. So, and I did see, I taught biology, actually, as well as physics and chemistry. And with biology, for some reason, you would have at least 50-50 girls at Leaving Cert, maybe even more, but not for physics. So I think it's a valid question to ask. But she's been hammered because she's been, you know, there are all kinds of people coming out and saying that she shouldn't have said it. But, I mean, it is true that girls aren't doing physics, and I think it's worth looking into.
The reasons why.
Exactly.
Okay, Sean Duke, the cool scientist, sciencespinning.com, all the information. And how are things otherwise, Sean? All good?
Great, everything's great. You're looking forward now, except for the Ukraine war, to getting through COVID. And I'm back writing my book and lots of things going on, doing two podcasts at the moment. So
fantastic. Where are they?
Well, the one is just finished, which was kind of an agricultural technology podcast I did with UCD. And I've got another one which I'm looking forward to, which is on space, Ireland in space, we're going to call it, which is all the things that are happening with Irish companies involved in space.
Brilliant. Sean Duke at sciencespinning.com for all that science information. Great to see you again, Sean. Thanks very much.